Today is November the 25th, 2020. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.fm on the internet. You can leave me a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. There is 5G and, of course, there is 5G. 5G operates on three different frequencies. Verizon 5G DSS isn't the 5G you've been expecting. There's the ultra-high-speed Verizon advertises, which is available only in a few urban spaces, and then there's Verizon's 5G speed dynamic spectrum sharing, 5G, which is available almost everywhere. The 5G spectrum is a range of radio frequencies in the sub-6 GHz range and the millimeter wave frequency range that is 24.25 GHz and above. The 5G spectrum refers to the radio frequencies that carry data from user equipment to cellular base stations to the data's endpoint. LTE networks use frequencies in the sub-6 GHz range and will be sharing the space with 5G traffic. The lower frequency bands will be used for less densely populated areas because data can travel further, though slower, on these frequencies. 5G will operate on three different spectrum bands. This structure may not seem very important for the average consumer, but it will have varying effects on everyday use. Low-band spectrum primarily used today by U.S. carriers for 3G and LTE. It provides consumers' coverage area with good building penetration, but peak data speeds top out around 100 megabits per second. T-Mobile is a leading player in the low-band spectrum space. Then there's the mid-band spectrum that sits between 1 GHz and 6 GHz, provides faster throughput and lower latency than the low-band spectrum. Mid-band transmissions are less suitable for building penetration, but peak speeds can reach as high as 1 gigabits per second and provide more capacity to the network. T-Mobile owns most of the unused mid-band spectrum in the United States. Then we have the high-band spectrum, what most people think of when they think of 5G, sometimes referred to as millimeter wave in the industry. High-band spectrum enables speeds up in the tens of gigabits per second range at even lower latency. However, the high-band coverage area is limited and building and range penetration is poor. For millimeter wave mobile devices to work, both the cell and the mobile device must use new antenna technology. As 5G starts rolling out in high-band spectrum, carriers will piggyback off LTE while overlaying the infrastructure to support 5G. 5G is confusing. It's not one technology that will bring you gigabit per second speeds and sub-10 millisecond latency. Only one of these, millimeter wave, can give you gigabit speeds, and Verizon, under the name 5G Ultra Wideband, leads in U.S. millimeter wave deployment. But the company also muddled the water by introducing yet another 5G approach, Dynamic Spectrum Sharing, that's DSS. Verizon's 5G DSS performance is pretty much the same as you're getting from Verizon's 4G LTE. So before you buy a new 5G phone, make sure you know exactly what you're getting. Almost no Verizon customers will see 5G Ultra Wideband speeds. Verizon praises 5G Ultra Wideband network, which is now available in 55 cities, 43 stadiums, and 7 airports. What Verizon doesn't mention is that the 5G Ultra Wideband has a range of only 150 meters. That's about 500 feet. And its 24 gigahertz and 28 gigahertz bands can barely transmit through window glass on a millimeter wave transceiver with a clear line of sight, and you won't get greater speed, latency, or throughput. Verizon's 5G DSS, which Verizon claims is already in 1,800-plus markets and covers over 200 million people, has the same range, but, and here's the bad news, speed and throughput of Verizon 4G LTE that you're already using. A Verizon spokesperson explained that their nationwide coverage layer of 5G was never meant to compete on speed or capacity, have keenly differentiated that what you thought was 5G is the powerful 5G ultra-wideband network. Initially, customers should expect that 5G Nation network to perform similarly to their award-winning, that's what they call their 4G LTE network. Performance and coverage will continue to grow over time. So why do it? Well, it's marketing. When you hear 5G, you think you're going to get all that super fast speed and ultra low latency. The reality is, you're not. That is going to tick users off when they realize that their pricey 5G smartphone gets exactly the same performance as their brother's old 4G LTE model. But Verizon added there are some benefits from DSS. Most of these, however, make life better for Verizon, not for you, the users. By enabling 5G service to run simultaneously with 4G LTE on multiple spectrum bands, Verizon can use its full portfolio of spectrum resources to serve both 4G and 5G customers. For users, all that means is that one good thing 5G DSS customers will see is better latency. More specifically, customers accessing 5G using DSS will be able to take advantage of Verizon's edge computing platforms, which bring the power of the cloud nearer to the user, drastically reducing the time it takes for data to make a round trip from point A to B. In particular, Verizon's specific services will be, hopefully, more responsive. That's all well and good, but the bottom line remains that 5G's hype for consumers is all about speed, and 5G DSS doesn't deliver and will never deliver that on that promise. Millimeter wave, which will only be limited to cities and large indoor spaces, is the only technology that will bring you gigabit speeds anytime soon. Caveat emptor. Buyer beware. Worn-out NAND flash blamed for Tesla vehicle infotainment failures. If you plan to buy a compact and budget-friendly laptop, the internal storage offered by such laptops is likely to be eMMC storage. eMMC is an integrated storage chip that sits on the device's motherboard, and it's like a permanent micro SD card. It is soldered onto the motherboard and is not a removable item. Before you buy a laptop with eMMC storage, consider if an eMMC storage has the features you need and if you can accept its limitations. The type you choose determines the overall performances and speed of your computer. eMMC stands for Embedded Multimedia Card. It's a type of internal storage embedded or attached to a device or a PC motherboard. eMMC storage uses the multimedia card standard and is based on NAND flash memory. The NAND flash memory used in eMMC storage isn't unique to eMMC and is found in other types of storage like secure data SD cards, solid-state drives, that's SSD, and USB thumb drives. eMMC storage is usually found in budget-friendly laptops, as well as tablets, Chromebooks, tablet PCs, 2-in-1 computers, and smartphones. For an eMMC chip that uses MLC technology, depending on the trace width of the silicon, a block lasts for 3,000 to 10,000 erase cycles on average. The trouble is that these flash chips are wearing out, having hit their program erase cycle limits and are unable to reliably store data, causing glitches in operation. The storage controller can no longer find good working NAND blocks to work and thus fail. eMMC memory was used in the early media control units found in the Tesla cars built before March 2018. Problems with Tesla are related to use of eMMC memory. Worn-out NAND flash are blamed for Tesla vehicle gremlins such as rear-view cam failures and silence audio alerts. eMMC storage will soon enough die in 159,000 cars, automaker says. According to a probe by investigators for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, at least 30% of the infotainment systems made in certain build months are failing due to the eMMC flash being worn out, typically after 3 to 4 years of use and service. According to the Safety Administration, this storage breakdown can result in a loss of rear-view backup camera, loss of HVAC defogging setting controls, that is to say that if the HVAC status was off status prior to failure. There is also an impact on the advanced driver assistance support, autopilot system, and turn signals functionality due to the possible loss of audible chimes, driver sensing, and alerts associated with these vehicle functions. This is based on 16,000 complaints and infotainment hardware replacement requests submitted by Tesla owners to the automaker. The team, which has been collecting evidence from Tesla for its investigation, pinpointed the eMMC flash as the problem and reckoned the issue is widespread enough to warrant a public warning to Tesla owners and those thinking of buying one of those electric vehicles. An engineering analysis has been opened to further assess the scope, frequency, and safety-related consequences of the alleged defect. The NHTSA's Office of Defect Investigation added, newer models fitted with an improved computer unit aren't affected by these problems since they don't use the Tegra 3 chips with built-in eMMC flash and instead use Intel-powered hardware. Tesla said it has emitted firmware updates that try to reduce the wear and tear of the flash chips. Specifically, the patches reduce memory usage of flash storage, improve eMMC error correction and storage management strategies, changing the control logic for turn signal activation and defaulting the HVAC system to auto for drives after failure to address windshield defogging. This is according to NHTSA. The manufacturer admitted the flash memory will still fail eventually, regardless of any software updates applied, and will require a hardware replacement. The hardware in question is the Media Control Unit, the MCU1, and it has 8 GB of Hynix soldered-on flash solid-state memory card, which is located on a smaller daughter board. All Tesla cars built before March 2018 have this chip, and like all flash memory, it only has a certain number of writes before it will slow fail. Model S and Model X vehicles that were built prior to March 2018 include the Media Control Unit Model 1. Newer vehicles built in April 2018 and beyond featured the newest version, MCU2, which is not a problem. What is being done about it? Well, an update for November 2020. Tesla has publicly announced fundamental changes to the warranty to address the situation. Arecibo SETI dish will be demolished due to risk of catastrophic collapse. The recent failure of two support cables at the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico has destabilized the structure. Following a review of engineering assessments that found damage to the Arecibo Observatory cannot be stabilized without risk to construction workers and staff at the facility, the United States National Science Foundation will begin plans to decommission the 305-meter telescope, which for the past 57 years has served as a world-class resource for radio astronomy, planetary, solar system, and geospace research. Engineers have been examining the Arecibo Observatory 305-meter telescope since August, when one of the support cables detached. The National Science Foundation authorized the University of Central Florida, which manages Arecibo, to take all reasonable steps and use available funds to address the situation while ensuring safety remained the highest priority. The University of Central Florida acted quickly and the evaluation process was following its expected timeline, considering the age of the facility, the complexity of the design, and the potential risk to workers. The director of the National Science Foundation's Division of Astronomical Sciences said that they are not closing the Arecibo Observatory, while the 1,000-foot dish will have to be demolished. It will need to be done in such a way to protect the facility's other assets, including many important buildings. After the telescope decommissioning, the National Science Foundation intends to restore operations at assets such as the Arecibo Observatory LIDAR facility, as well as the Visitor Center and off-site Calibra facility, which analyzes cloud cover and precipitation data. The National Science Foundation would also seek to explore possibilities for expanding the educational capacities of the Learning Center. Arecibo is a threefold purpose facility supporting astronomy and astrophysics, atmospheric and ionospheric research, and lastly, providing solar system astronomy and asteroid observations. The observatory has been Earth's best line of defense, watching for potential hazardous asteroids. Arecibo has a LIDAR, or light detection and ranging facility, that will remain in use for Earth atmospheric and ionospheric research, but even that will be impacted because the large dish played a big part in some of those observations. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with his IT Pro Series, OEM versus third-party ink and toner.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. It's time for me to discuss the different bits and pieces of technology that we deal with in the office. This comes from, many years of experience with computers and technology in a professional capacity. And this is a topic which applies to everybody more than just in the office. This really applies across the board. But I'm going to tell you what I did as an IT professional with a very limited budget in a number of different companies over the years. All right, so what is this topic? It is printer toner and ink cartridges and all of the different little items that go along with buying the OEM, the original equipment manufacturer, and third-party items, third-party replacements. I will tell you that most of my experience with third party has been less than thrilling. I'm gonna start off by staying outside of the printer toner and ink cartridge world, but it kind of backs it up. When I get to there, it's gonna be kind of the same story. I recently ran into a problem with one of my laptops. It is a brand name laptop. It has this big, huge picture of an apple on it, if you know what I mean. And the power brick, the cord coming out of it, going to that computer, it has reached its end of life. It's fraying. There's metal wiring that's exposed. It really needs replacing. So I replaced it. I looked at the cost of the OEM versus the third-party manufacturer. The third-party manufacturer was half the price. It's power. How bad could it be? It's going to provide electricity. It's going to convert 120 volts down to the 5, 12, 3 volts, whatever it is that the computer needs. Perfect. Wonderful. I got it. I plugged it in, and it has... It has introduced a buzz across the audio interface. Now, for most people, that'd be fine, but I'm in radio. I do a lot of recording with that laptop. I basically was crippled by that third-party item. Is it functional? Yes. Is it providing electricity? Yes. Is it shielded? No. So there's a problem there. There's a problem that has been sorted out and solved by the major manufacturer, the big guys, the OEM. And I'm sure they've run across this and they've been very aware of this problem. And they fixed it for themselves, but they don't share that information downstream with all of the different competitors who are offering up products at half the price. On the flip side, So I have my smartphone. It has a proprietary custom cord. It doesn't use the standard USB to micro SD or USB-C connector. No, it has something called the Lightning connector. No, you know, I'm not all that deep into that space. I'm into, just so you know, I'm into a number of different realms around, all the way around. So, look, yes, I do utilize third-party cords for that. I do utilize the third-party cords, which happen to be better than the OEM cord. Usually it's because I've spent a good amount on them. I've acquired cords that are more durable, that are purpose-built for it, but it's not quite the same situation as when we move on down into toner and ink. Toner and ink, we think it's pretty close. We think it's almost the same thing. You're using the same thing over here and the same thing over there. It's perfectly fine. Well, no, actually you aren't. And this is where I've run into a number of different issues. If I put in a third-party toner cartridge into my laser printer, if it's black and white, it's going to be mostly the same. There's going to be a few different instances where the quality isn't quite as good. I've run into that a number of times. I had a manufacturer, a supplier, I guess is a better term for it. And they provided me, this goes back into the 90s, and I dealt with them on a regular basis across a couple of different companies. And they did a great job. The problem was that we might save $5 at a time. $5 per cartridge really mounts up when you start buying a matter of 10, 15, 20 a month. Yes, we went through that much toner. But where did it go wrong? Well, I found out that I was, yes, utilizing and saving that, you know, $5 a, you know, here and there. But what happened was if something broke down, I could spend a couple of hours, 2, 3, 4 hours working with that one printer and going through the return process, which was somewhat painless. And I could deal with that. But the thing is, I don't want to, because spending that little bit of time could develop into a bigger problem. Because it happens again and again and again. The other thing that we've got is if we start moving into color, with all of those different manufacturers, they have calibrated everything and they use exact measurements to make sure that that particular red always turns out to be the exact same red every time. That green, that blue, that whatever it is that you're looking at on whatever is printed out, it will wind up being exactly the same. And they don't share those formulas with the third parties either. Yeah, there's something to be concerned about there. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Employee surveillance software demand increase as workers transition to home working. As people hunker down to work from home during COVID-19, companies turn to employee surveillance software to track their staff. What does the rise of intrusive tools such as employee surveillance software mean for workers at home? A new study shows that demand for employee surveillance software was up 55% in June of this year compared to pre-pandemic average. From webcam access to random screenshot monitoring, these surveillance software products can record almost everything an employee does on their computer. The survey uses global monitoring data to analyze over 200 terms related to employee surveillance software. It took into account both generic and brand-specific queries for its studies, which compared searches during March through May of 2020 with internet searches in the preceding year. Global demand for employee monitoring software increased by 108% in April and 70% in May of 2020, compared with searches carried out the preceding year. Queries for how to monitor employees working from home increased by 1,705% in April and 652% in May of this year compared with searches carried out the preceding year. The surge in popularity of such an open-ended phrase like this reveals how unprepared many companies were for the abrupt shift to mass home working. The most popular surveillance tools are Time Doctor, Hubstaff, and FlexiSpy. The tools with the biggest increase in demand include TerraMine, DeskTime, Kick Idler, and Time Doctor, with interest for the latter tripling compared to the pre-pandemic levels. The top three tools account for almost 60% of global demand in surveillance software because of the range of features offered. Of the most popular employee monitoring tools, 81% offered keystroke logging so that employers can see every click of the keyboard. Over 3 in 5, that's 61%, provide instant messaging monitoring so that private instant messages can be viewed. Employers can also monitor how employees' conversations are going at any point in time. 2 in 3, 65%, can be configured to send user action alerts, such as noticing when the keyboard has been idle for a set amount of time, and 38% are capable of remote control takeovers, such as blocking access to websites or remote installation of software. One package, NetVisor, claims operates entirely in stealth, that is, it's nearly invisible to the consumer. The radical shift away from office working has clearly made employers nervous about a reduction in productivity and its potential impact on their business. Greater surveillance, however, may actually reduce long-term productivity. Your boss watching your every move may make you less productive in the long run and could significantly impact your feelings about the company itself. Turn off Gmail's smart features to avoid tracking. It should not come as a surprise to you that Google collects data on everything you do while using its product and services. Sometimes this data is sold to, wait a minute, I think it's all the time the data is sold to advertisers, and sometimes it's used to make it easier to use Google's products. For example, Google uses data from Gmail, Chat, and Meet to make the entire Google user experience, as they call it, more convenient. Like how it'll learn how you type and suggest automated message replies that hopefully sounds natural. However, some people don't want their data tracked and stored, period, no matter what convenience it brings. While there are already ways to change Gmail's data collection behavior, it will soon be easier to opt out of Google's tracking thanks to two new Gmail settings rolling out in the coming weeks. First, users will now have the option to disable Gmail's smart features like Smart Compose, Smart Reply, and more. While these features are handy, Google has to root through your Gmail, Meet, and Chat data for them to work. The other settings let users prevent Gmail, Chat, and Meet data from being used in other Google apps. Just like disabling smart features, turning off personalizations removes certain conveniences like content suggestion in Google Search, restaurant recommendations in Google Maps, or automated bill pay reminders from Google Assistant. You might lose a bit of helpfulness, but at least you'll keep Google out of your inbox a bit more. Don't worry, if you don't like these features, collect your data. It's not mentioned anywhere in Gmail settings. Thankfully, the new user options are much clearer about how smart features work and how Google uses the data it has collected. Google is not going to make it easy for you to find these features on how to turn them off. Presenting Marty Winston on Home Automation with Wishbones.
With all those wonderful aromas from the night before prep for tomorrow's feast just tantalizing your nostrils, you must be a very loyal listener to have us in your ear right now, so you get our first round of thanks this Thanksgiving. Thanks, too, to the researchers who are bringing us close to vaccines almost half a year earlier than it was reasonable to expect. Thanks to the pandemic frontline people working so diligently to cure and comfort the ill. Thanks to the businesses and workers who adapted to our temporary reality with the kind of resolve that's rare outside of a wartime. Thanks to the mountain region farmers who are finding ways to still get crops into the national food supply despite the long-term drought dropping the water supplies of their aquifers. Thanks to the first responders who bring good hearts and good training into bad situations. But if you're listening to a tech radio show right before Thanksgiving, well, something about that strongly suggests that Black Friday is on your mind, right? Wouldn't you love to hear about the 60-inch 4K TV you can get for a dollar if you're one of the first 10 people in line at Circuit City? Really, there's no need to be that specific. Ask yourself this. Is your interest in Black Friday about saving money or about spending money? The past 2 weeks have been full of hundreds of press releases about Black Friday bargains. Balance that by remembering that the past year has been full of changes that brought hardships. Fat and sassy may have been on the menu for that turkey, but not many of the people you know who are getting through this year would ever think of themselves as fat and sassy. For many, evictions aren't far off. Major stimulus help may not happen until January or February. Costs are up and paychecks are down all over the place. But still, Black Friday. How do you resist those bargains? Try this. A solid gold tie clip with a diamond and your initials, normally $250, now just $39. Should you grab it? Really? When's the last time you wore a tie? When is the next time you'll be somewhere and somebody you want to impress can see you wearing a tie and that tie clip? The message is, get real. Is there something else where $39 could be better spent? A seat cushion for working at home. Doesn't matter if it's on sale or not, it's a more thoughtful and more useful gift. New earbuds? Maybe, if the old ones are getting flaky. New masks? Well, those vaccines aren't here yet. You'll be seeing tons of ads, and it's their job to tempt and tantalize you. It's easy to slip into the mode where you think of them as advice. Oh, they're not. Try thinking of them as if you're watching a show about snake oil or confidence games. Some fast talker might offer you two for a dollar or five for $3, and if you don't stop to do the math, you'll pay 60 cents each instead of 50 cents each. That's what two for a dollar comes out to, 50 cents, and five for $3, 60 cents. Then there's the question that even a look at the math distracted you from considering. What will you do with five of them? Do you even need two of them? Do you need any? That kind of slick is all over the place. Don't let it slip you up. Listen, it can feel good to find something fun and find that at a bargain. It can also feel bad when buyer's remorse sets in later. Would you like to try the path between them? As you hear about Black Friday deals, turn your brain into a matchmaker. Who's on your list for presents who would really find that thing significantly useful? There's also a flip side to that. If you're with your clan on Turkey Day, you can all find an opportunity to brainstorm about what would be a great gift for each of the closest people to you who aren't there with you. And to keep Black Friday from pulling you into the red, be careful of thinking in terms of replacements. It isn't all that often that somebody really needs a new toaster or TV set or coffee maker or PC or electric toothbrush. If it's a personal grooming item like a hair dryer, a store gift card can be a good way to go while also helping you control your spending. Gag or novelty gifts? No. Punchlines are funny only once and often not even once. Sometimes mundane stuff can be a great gift. Like a single package with dozens of AA or AAA batteries, spare charging cords for phones, a magnifying glass or magnifying glasses, a pocket flashlight, a roll of forever stamps. Now, let's go the other way. What do you have that's wearing out and needs replacing? A mouse or keyboard, your tablet, your belt, mittens, scarf, snow brush, electric screwdriver. People who want to get you gifts would love an idea of what you'd really appreciate, really find useful. Listen, you've just been through one of the most challenging years on record. If there was ever a holiday when glitz and bling don't need to frost the things you give and get, this is it. A lot of what counts these days is down to basic humanity. It's about being good to each other, being good for each other, not about the goods you give and get each other. So, for Black Friday, don't let the frenzy seduce you. Great products at great prices are going to be available for another month, after which, if they're still available, well, the prices may be even better. If you ever suspected that companies bring out specific models just to sell for Black Friday and Cyber Monday, yeah, you're absolutely right. That doesn't mean you need those. It doesn't even necessarily mean they're the best bargains in the category. Would you like a 60-inch TV for $200? Probably not. They'd need to take a lot of performance out of a 60-inch TV to sell it for that little. Remember that inexpensive is not the only meaning for the word cheap. If there's one gift that would benefit just about everybody who works from home, and one that almost nobody knows they need until they get it, it's a better microphone. I mean, really, they just don't know. They sound like they're on a toy phone or a really cheap walkie-talkie. They'd like a better mic. And it's interesting to read the studies that show that marriages have grown stronger in the past few months as couples spent more time together. Also, in case you hadn't noticed, it's getting colder out, so a nice warm cuddle blanket that's big enough for two might be a thoughtful gift. There are some items you should simply ignore, like suitcases or passport cases or anything else that has to do with travel. No one's going anywhere. On the other hand, almost everyone is speedily wearing out their pajamas. Are these things you find on the Black Friday or Cyber Monday lists? Amazon wants you to buy shorts and wristwatches and home audio systems and electric pressure cookers or save $700 on a 75-inch TV set. Are you kidding me? I think the message is this. Don't feel intimidated just because you don't want to buy something. Don't feel like your relationship's restrained if friends or family give or get gifts this year that are less extravagant than in the past. It's a very appropriate year for gift cards. Meanwhile, be thankful for whatever you have in front of you and around you and inside you, for family, for friends, for survival, for curiosity, for never abandoning your love for learning. And please accept our thanks for the time you spend here. Next time, we start a round of exploring some of the more than 300 products we reviewed this year. Our first stop is our Benchware report on, you guessed it, tools. It's a little nuts and a little screwy, but we think we'll nail it.
Thank you, Marty. Black Friday specials and Cyber Monday sales will have become a passing memory. The holiday shopping started October 13th with Amazon heavily promoting their special Prime Day sales for October 13th and 14th. You really didn't think the other big retailers would just be watching from the sidelines. They too jump into the sales fray. Sale prices have gone up and down since then. Lenovo had selected items for their Labor Day special sale, and since I was in no rush, I figured I'd just wait until Black Friday. But when Amazon promoted their Prime Day, Lenovo dropped the price of the system I was interested in purchasing another 15%. I just assumed that this would be the Black Friday's price, so I went ahead with the purchase. Just before Halloween, they took off the 15% additional discount. In other words, the price went back up. Now they have just announced their Black Friday specials, and it is now the same 15% additional discount reactivated. I have been looking at other computer products from various manufacturers, and I've developed a very complacent view on this holiday shopping season. I am not swayed by the upcoming Black Friday and Cyber Monday so-called blockbuster sales. If I really need it, I'll buy at the best price at that point in time. Retailers have outsmarted themselves promoting every day as a special sales day. By the way, other than Apple products, when was the last time you paid list price for any electronics? Buyer beware, caveat emptor. Presenting Joe King with his Thanksgiving thoughts.
Hey, Hank, by now I guess you've told all the folks about the good news and the bad news about Black Friday. And I just want to point out one thing. I bought a lot of Black Friday things at great prices 2 weeks ago. So don't be so sure that Black Friday is a bargain now. The other thing I'd like to mention is I am very, very upset with Motorola G7 Power. That's my phone. And they've decided that they know what's best for me. And so they've been updating apps overnight without letting me know when the next day when I use the phone, particularly when I use it in a car, it doesn't do the things that it used to do, or it does them differently. For example, this is really minor, Hank, but yesterday I had to get out to the doctor in a rush, and I couldn't remember where the best route was, so I went to plug my phone in to the car that I drive, the Subaru. It doesn't have its own GPS. It uses the smartphone. And one of the things you have to do with the Subaru is you have to manually set up the map before you get into the car, and then just plug it in and everything's fine. Not anymore. Now you have to look on the map on the console, and guess what? You're represented by a little red sedan which twists around and turns around and confuses the hell out of you. But Motorola thought that was a better way to go. The other thing that Motorola can't seem to decide is whether I have to put Android phone on using my smartphone, or the car can put it on using its panel and pre-programmed material. I still don't know what I'm supposed to do because they keep changing it. I don't know why. And I used to have a different manufacturer's phone, and I was able to make the choice whether or not I wanted it to be automatically updated. I can't seem to find a way to do that. And if any of our listeners knows how to do that with my Motorola, my Moto G7 Power, please write in and tell me. I would really appreciate it. Hank, I'm going to miss you on this Thursday. Usually I say to you on the day before that I wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, and I wish it for your family, for Jean and the children and the grandchildren. I can't do that this year. I'm not there. So today or tonight is a Monday night down here in Arizona. I don't know what it is up there. They have different times and different... We never did get rid of daylight savings time down here. Oh, yes, that's because we never went on it. We screwed up the time. The politicians don't understand that the rest of us are people. At any rate, Hank, I wish you all a very, very good Thanksgiving. And remember, in spite of all the bad, in spite of the politics, in spite of the COVID-19, in spite of the international situation, there's an awful lot of good to be thankful for. And in my case, the biggest thing I'm thankful for is I'm still alive. Good night, Hank.
What Americans think they know about the history of Thanksgiving doesn't always square with the truth. It is generally believed that in 1621, the Pilgrims invited the Wampanoag Indians to a feast in Plymouth Colony to celebrate their first harvest. Historians say they do know that there was a feast that year shared by colonists and Wampanoag Indians. But the one historical account of the actual dinner says venison was served and some sort of fowl, but it doesn't specifically mention turkey. Pumpkin was available, but it is not likely the colonists whipped up a pie. Furthermore, sweet potatoes were unknown to the colonists, and cranberries may have been served, but not as a relish. In 1789, George Washington declared Thursday, November the 26th, a Thanksgiving holiday, but only for that year. And it wasn't connected to the pilgrim feast, but rather intended as a public thanksgiving and prayer. And in 1863, Lincoln did set Thanksgiving as an official holiday to be celebrated on the fourth Thursday of November every year. In 1939, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt moved the annual Thanksgiving holiday to the third Thursday of November. Why? To help the economy by making the Christmas shopping season a little bit longer. There was so much opposition to the move that 2 years later, he changed it back to the fourth Thursday in November. By the way, the tradition of the presidential pardon of a turkey started in 1989 when President George H.W. Bush officially pardoned the first one. Many Americans attend a local Thanksgiving Day parade, and these parades are often televised. This year will be different. The 2.5-mile Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade has been scaled back and will be held just at Herald Square. For nearly 100 years, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade has been a time-honored tradition for both New Yorkers and families around the country. The parade will still go on, but it's going to be a little different this year due to safety concerns caused by the coronavirus pandemic. But like pretty much every other tradition and institution that has continued in 2020, it will look and feel a little different due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The 94th annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade will be televised from 9 a.m. to noon Thursday on NBC. While the festivities have historically drawn massive crowds to the streets of Manhattan, and there were about 3.5 million in-person spectators along the 2.5-mile parade route last year, this year, all activity will be focused on the Herald Square area of Midtown, and the only way to watch will be on television. For New Yorkers who typically see it live and in person, this change for them is that they're going to experience it the same way the rest of the country experiences it. They're still going to see the balloons. They're still going to see the floats. They're still going to see Santa and Broadway, all of these elements that they're used to seeing every single year. They might have some differences in what we're going to see, some social distancing. We're going to have masks, things like that, but it's still going to be the parade they know and love. Since 1924, the employees of Macy's department store have been putting on a Thanksgiving Day parade that takes place in the streets of New York City. This annual event has ballooned into a national celebration that, to many, marks the official start of the holiday season. In a normal year, its 2.5-mile route, also known as the world's longest stage, would be lined with 3.5 million spectators. But like so many things in 2020, modifications had to be made in order for this American classic to safely continue. This year's parade is certainly going to be different, but it's going to feel familiar to a lot of people. Since safety is a top priority, Macy limited the participation overall for the parade to about 30% of what we would normally have. Ordinarily, the massive balloons are publicly inflated for the enjoyment of around 1 million New Yorkers, just north of the parade's normal starting line at the Museum of Natural History. This year, to discourage onlookers from gathering, the public inflation won't be happening, and the parade itself will be starting just blocks from the iconic department store on 34th Street. Some Thanksgiving Day parades will be canceled this year, and others will look a little different. Nationwide, the country can still enjoy the tradition of watching the Thanksgiving Day parade. DistroTV, that's DISTROTV.com, is serving up a 24-hour marathon of past Thanksgiving parades. DistroTV is partnering with Plymouth Rock TV to bring a 24-hour marathon of parades from the past marching right into your home. Starting today, Wednesday, November the 25th, and continuing through Thanksgiving Day, viewers can tune in to distrotv.com as they stream a tribute to the American Thanksgiving Experience 2020, featuring hours of content in celebration of the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims landing on Plymouth Rock. DistroTV is a free streaming service available on the web, as well as Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and iOS and Android devices. For most of us, Thanksgiving Day is the gathering of family and close friends. This will be scaled back due to the pandemic of COVID-19. Many are planning, though, to still meet through teleconferencing. In these times, we have had to endure much adversity. We count our blessings. There is some wonderful advice contained in these lyrics. If you're worried and you can't sleep, just count your blessings instead of sheep, and you'll fall asleep counting your blessing. Yes, Thanksgiving is a time to reflect upon the blessings that we have received and to simply give thanks. From the staff of the Personal Computer Show. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Most of the computer clubs have begun to schedule their general monthly meetings through teleconferencing. For updated information, visit the website of the computer club. The Westchester PC Users Group will have a presentation on holiday tech gift ideas. Thursday, December the 3rd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. via Zoom video conferencing. Their website is wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey has their general meeting on Friday, December the 4th. Meeting time starts at 8 p.m. and they meet via Jitsi Meet. The website is acgnj.org. The New York Amateur Computer Club has their meeting on Thursday, December the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and there will be a presentation on Is Electromagnetic Spectrum Altering Your DNA? The teleconferencing is via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group will have a presentation on Are Your Bits Flipped? Thursday, December the 10th. Meeting time starts at 6:45 p.m. via Zoom teleconferencing. The website is bcug.com. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, December the 11th. Meeting time starts at 8 p.m., and it'll be a virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is limac.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of this program is available on prn.fm on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email address to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Marty Winston, and Benjamin Rockwell, we thank you for listening and happy Thanksgiving. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.